Welcome to all of you. Welcome to everybody who's here. Welcome to everybody watching online. We're glad to have you, whoever and wherever you are. It's great to have streaming and think we could be in the presence of somebody on the other side of the world. I'm glad for that. As we get started, it's been 2 weeks, by the way. You may recall last week we had a young man come and who's interested in the position of associate minister here. We have something this morning also. This is Memorial Day, but this doesn't have anything to do with Memorial Day. It's also coming up graduation day for seniors. There's a lot going on in the spring. These blue sheets are in the back. All it says is, well, it doesn't say it, you have to read it. There's, what word of advice would you give to our graduating teens? Your advice may be used anonymously in an upcoming lesson. So give some advice to our graduates, anything you'd like to tell them, something to say, be sure to do this or be sure not to do that, whatever it is, write it on this, and Titus and I will collect these and go over them, and we may well be using your advice in an upcoming lesson. And we will use it anonymously. You don't need to put your name down, but if you do, we'll just make sure we don't use anything more than your initials. Thank you. I'm looking forward to hearing some good advice. I might learn something too. Come on through. You got room? All right. Good to see you, Preston. We're in chapter 4 this morning with our new class, but let's do the worksheet, not the worksheet, the review over last week's class from chapter 3. What's that? Anybody need a worksheet or a quiz? We got plenty. John's at the ready. I saw hands on both sides. Keep them high. He's wielding the worksheets. He's a welder wielding worksheets. He's the right welder wielding worksheets. Are you hot, Amy? It's warm back there, is it? Well, all the hot air's up here, so. Anybody else? Any on this side? Everybody got one? Okay. Let's get started then.
The what?
Retired non-working class? Oh, I don't. This class works pretty well. Okay. We got some active people in here. Well, the lazy sluggard class is down the hall, I think. I'm reading about that in Proverbs. Not that you are one. Daniel chapter blank tells King Nebuchadnezzar built and blank. Chapter 3. We were in chapter 3 last week. And he built a what? An idol or an image. Image would probably be a little more accurate. But he did. Well, let's just move on with the worksheet and see what he did with it. Which was blank feet high and blank feet wide. 90 feet high. 60 cubits. So if you want cubits, it's 60 cubits, but it's 90 feet. And then how wide was it? It was 9 feet wide, or 6 cubits. And he built it in the plain of, you remember? Dura. D-U-R-A. That's where they make the batteries, I think. The Dura cells. Number 2, at the dedication ceremony, he commanded all present to bow down and blank before the image. Worship before the image with the blank, or when the blank started. The music, it should be, seems like it should be when. But anyway, when the music starts, everybody's supposed to bow down. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Jews who held positions in the blank. The word was province. They would not bow down. How did they get those positions in the province? How did three Jewish boys brought over from Jerusalem after the battle and captivity, how did they get positions of prominence? They were smart, they were. But something happened, they were educated.
I don't say they did just what we do today. When we capture or overcome one country, we don't take all the smart people and get rid of them. We put them to work.
Put them to work. Unless you're communist, and if you are communist, then you kill everybody who's got a brain. That's what the socialists have done historically. Number four, the king was furious when they continued to refuse, ordered them to be thrown into the fiery furnace. And when they were not harmed, the king called them out and said that he now knew their God was greater than other gods and sent a blank throughout the land honoring their God. What did he send throughout the land? It was a decree. A decree. The quality for which we honor these men is their courage. We would look at their courage. And keep in mind, while courage seems so obvious, it's not necessarily something that's pointed out in the text. We read the text and we surmise, we come to conclusions ourselves. You probably believe, as I do, that when we read the Bible, God intends for us to reason over the things we read, the information we're getting, and make the best use of it. And that is why we have come to the conclusion that courage is something we need to learn from these young men. All right, that's last week's lesson, or 2 weeks ago. Let's get to this week's, which is chapter 4. It's 37 verses. I think we ought to read it. How about you? Well, it doesn't matter what you think, because I'm the teacher. Ha, 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 ha. That's probably not a very good way to get readers to volunteer, but who wants to take the first 9 verses, 1 through 9 of chapter 4? All right, Rich, and then 10 through 18. Who wants that section right there? I know you're looking to see what big words there are. All right, Nick has got it, my son-in-law. And then 19 to 27, who wants that one? Any hands in the back? All right, hand in the front. Jake's got 19 to 27. And 28 to 33. And we'll just make a clean sweep of this thing. Oh, Brandy's got 28 to 33. And I'll finish up with 34 to 37. That way my mouth will be warmed up when I need to start talking. All right, 1 through 9.
Nebuchadnezzar, the king of all the peoples, nations, and men of every language that live in all the earth, may your peace abound. It has seemed good to me to declare the signs and wonders which the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs, and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. The vision of the great tree. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at ease in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream, and it made me fearful. And these fantasies, as I lay on my bed, and the visions in my mind, kept alarming me. So I gave orders to bring into my presence all the wise men of Babylon, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the diviners came in, and I related the dream to them, but they could not make its interpretation known to me. But finally, Daniel came in before me, whose name is Belshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is a spirit of the holy gods. And I related the dream to him, saying, O Belshazzar, chief of the magicians, since I know that the spirit of the holy gods is in you, and no mystery baffles you, tell me the visions of my dream, which I have seen, along with its interpretation.
Visions of my head as I lay in bed, I saw and behold a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew and became strong, and its top reached to heaven, and it was visible to the end of the whole earth. Its leaves were beautiful, and its fruit abundant. And in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it, and the birds of the heavens lived in its branches, and all flesh was fed from it. I saw the visions of my head as I lay in bed, and behold, the watcher, the Holy One, came down from heaven. He proclaimed aloud and said thus, chop down the tree, lop off its branches, strip off its leaves, and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts flee from under it, and the birds from its branches, but leave the stump of its root, roots in the earth, bound with a band of iron and rod, amid the tender grass of the field. Let him be wet with the dew of heaven, let his portion be with the beasts and the grass of the earth. Let his mind be changed from a man's, and let a beast's mind be given to him. Let 7 periods of time pass over him. Let the sentence is by the decree of the watchers, the decision by the word of the Holy Ones, to the end that the living may know that the Most High rules the kingdom of men, and gives it to him who will, and sets over it the lowliest of men. This dream I, King Nebuchadnezzar, saw, and you, O Belteshazzar, tell me the interpretation, because all the wise men of my kingdom were not able to make known to me the interpretation, but you are able, for the Spirit of the Holy God is in you.
Then Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, was appalled for a while, and thoughts alarmed him. The king responded and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation alarm you. Belteshazzar answered and said, my lord, if only the dream applied to those who hate you and its interpretation to your adversaries. The tree that you saw, which became large and grew strong, was high reached to the sky and was visible to all the earth, and whose foliage was beautiful and its fruit abundant, and in which was food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt, and in whose branches the birds of the sky lodged. It was you, O king, for you have become great and grown strong, and your majesty has become great and reached to the sky, and your dominion to the end of the earth. And in that king saw an angelic watcher, the Holy One, descending from heaven and said, chop down the tree and destroy it, yet leave the stump with its roots in the ground, but with a band of iron and bronze around it, and the new grass filled. And let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, let him share the beasts of the field till 7 periods of time pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord, the king, that you be driven away from mankind and your dwelling place with the beasts of the field, and be given grass to eat like cattle, and drenched with the dew of heaven. And 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind, and bestows it on whomever he wishes. And if that was commanded to leave the stump with the roots of the tree, your kingdom will be assured to you after you recognize that it is heaven that rules. Therefore, O king, may my advice be pleasing to you. Break away from your sins by doing righteousness, and from your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, in the case there may be a prolonging of your prosperity.
All of this happened to Nebuchadnezzar the king. 12 months later, he was walking on the roof of the royal palace at Babylon. The king began speaking and was saying, is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? While the word was still in the king's mouth, a voice came from heaven, saying, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared, sovereignty has been removed from you, and you will be driven away from mankind, and your dwelling place will be with the animals of the field. You will be given grass to eat like cattle, and 7 periods of time will pass over you until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whomever he wishes. Immediately, the word concerning Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled, and he was driven away from mankind and began eating grass like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws.
But at the end of that period, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes toward heaven, and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are accounted as nothing, but he does according to his will in the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. And no one can ward off his hand or say to him, "What have you done?" At that time, my reason returned to me, and my majesty and splendor were restored to me for the glory of my kingdom. And my counselors and my nobles began seeking me out. So I was reestablished in my sovereignty, and surpassing greatness was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven, for all his works are true and his ways just, and he is able to humble those who walk in pride. Man, what an account of this bit of history. Let's fill in the blanks for our worksheet and talk about this. Nebuchadnezzar sends a decree to all his kingdom, giving blank to the Most High God. What's he giving? He's giving honor to the Most High God. Did you get a worksheet, Casey? Got them in? Right down there. Don't want you to miss out. Honor to the Most High God who has performed blanks for him. Wonders, signs. This decree came about because Nebuchadnezzar had a blank, a dream, and he asked his blank blanks to interpret, his wise men. Am I going too fast? When they failed, he turned to blank for the interpretation. Daniel. In his dream, Nebuchadnezzar saw a huge blank tree, which grew even bigger. Its blanks were beautiful. Its leaves or boughs were beautiful, and its fruit abundant. Under it, blank found shelter. Beasts, animals found shelter. Blank roosted in it. Birds. And from it, all creatures were blank. They were fed. Huge tree, beautiful leaves. Animals take shelter underneath. Birds take shelter in it, in the boughs, and all of them eat the fruit. Then a holy one commanded for the tree to be blank, blank, cut down, its leaves blanked off, strip off those beautiful leaves, and its fruit to be scattered. All this is in the account. The blank, however, was to be left. The stump was to be left and was to be bound or banded by iron and bronze. Then the person represented by the tree was to be drenched with blank dew and was to live among the animals as an blank. As an animal, for blank times, seven times. Number three, the reason for this unusual happening was to show the blank of God, the power of God, sovereignty, might, over blanks. Now you could put kings, but he's really sovereign over kingdoms, and that will be the point. The power of God over kingdoms and how he can be active in the blanks of men, in the affairs. If you have another word that fits, that's fine. When the worksheet calls for something right out of the scriptures, that's one thing. When it's talking about the general gist, that's another. Number four, Daniel says that the tree suggests that all the blank depends on Nebuchadnezzar. All the world depends on Nebuchadnezzar. But that he will be blanked, but not completely destroyed. He will be humbled. He will be humbled. That's what he says in his conclusion. He knows how to humble the powerful. Then he will be like an blank, like an animal for a period of time, being in blank from other humans. What would you put there? Isolation, separation, shows him out being drenched with the dew, and the only way to be drenched with the dew is to be out in the open all the time, overnight. So he's isolated from everybody. And he is blanking the grass of the field, eating the grass of the field. He's welcome to come to my house. When he acknowledges that the Most High is blank over all the kingdoms of men, sovereign, Lord, then he will be restored. Number five, Daniel advises the king, even before all this takes place, to renounce his sins by doing what is right, and by being kind or generous to the oppressed. Before we go on to six, anybody got any blanks you need filled in that you missed? All right, good. Number six, 12 months after the dream, Nebuchadnezzar is on the blank of his palace, on the roof, surveying all he has built in Babylon. He is taking blank in how he made it so great. Pride. A voice says to him that his royal blank will be taken away. What would you put in that blank? His royal authority will be taken away. And he will live like an animal. How many times have you written animal down? That's the third time, isn't it? During this time, Nebuchadnezzar's hair will grow long like blanks, like feathers, and his nails like claws. After a period of time, Nebuchadnezzar raised his blanks toward heaven, raised his eyes toward heaven, and his blank was restored. His mind, his sanity, any way you want to put that. Then he blanked the Most High God, praised the Most High God, and acknowledged that his power was blank and blank. What two things would you put in there? But complete and eternal. Number eight, afterward, Nebuchadnezzar was returned to his place of blank, place of honor. And he sent a blank to all the people, a decree to all the people, telling them to give blank to the Most High God, honor. He was restored to his position of honor, and he sends a decree telling everyone to honor God. Daniel blank is the substance of that proclamation. Daniel 4, the whole chapter. When you read the first three verses, it talks about the decree. And then it looks like it goes into a narrative, but the narrative is the decree. Number 9. From this story, we learn that God blanks even the most powerful blanks. Controls even the most powerful kings or men, presidents, whoever it is, whatever it is. God rules in the affairs of men. All right. Of course, Nebuchadnezzar was a big, important fella. And so God was active in his life. Is God active in your life? What he says about God shows us that God is not limited to only working with a few people at a time. He works with all of us. Solomon said in Proverbs, a man's mind makes his way, makes his plans, but the Lord directs his steps. That's Proverbs 16:9, I believe. So the Lord is always active in our lives for good. John?
7 times, 3 different times.
Yes.
How long is the time, a period of 7? Because in the end, he ends up getting restored after he changes his mind, but he has to go those 7 times. So how long is the time? I mean,
I believe 7 is to be taken as a figure. The Jewish numerical system, they recognized numbers as important and they were significant. And when you say the word significant, what's the first 4 letters in significant? Sign. It was a sign. So 7 simply means until everything was accomplished, which it's kind of odd to say it this way because he lost his mind. But until he got his mind right, the 7 times weren't up.
But,
Not a definite period in the beginning. Of course, when it came to an end, you could look back and this is how many days or months or weeks or hours, whatever it was. That was referred to as the 7. The number 7 simply means complete. Right. However long it took. What was he told about his kingdom at the beginning? Let's go to find this here. Verse 26. And in that it was commanded to leave the stump with the roots of the tree, your kingdom will be assured to you. Now think about that. It's kind of like with Jonah. What do we normally think of as the great wonder in the story of Jonah? Swallowed by a big animal, a big creature, and 3 days later burped up on the beach. That's what seems to be the big wonder. But actually, when I read it, I now think the big wonder is this guy who hates the Ninevites preaches to them and 120,000 repent. That, to me, is the real wonder. And so here, what's the wonder? Well, we might think, the real wonder is, wow, this guy turns into an animal and his hair gets like bird's feathers and his nails become claws and he's out eating grass like an ox. Now, that's a wonder, but the real wonder is that when he's done with that, what happens? He gets his kingdom back. Yes?
Talk about the 7 times and you look at Nebuchadnezzar raised his eyes. It took him, the raised his eyes isn't he physically looked up. He was in his soul. He was spiritually looking up to God. You're right, I was wrong. He's repenting. And that's what allowed him to have his kingdom back.
Right.
It's the same kind of situation with Jonah. And we see it repeated in different manners all through the Bible. That when we get too high and mighty for our own good, something's going to bring you down, and it's only until you repent and mean it that you're going to have a relationship with God again.
What story does Jesus tell that's similar to this in those respects? You think of the prodigal son? Got this boy who starts out, he is on top of the world. He's got money and he's going to go spend it however he wants. Nobody's going to stop him or pull him back. And so he does that, and where does he wind up? Winds up in the pig pen with the pigs, longing to eat from the food that he's giving the pigs. And what does Jesus say of him at that point? Is that Luke 15? Came to his senses. That's an interesting turn of phrase, isn't it? Verse 17, Luke 15, 17. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have more than enough, but I am dying here with hunger?" And he thinks he's going to go back and become a servant in his father's house. And when he gets back, what happens? His father restores him to sonship. It's what we're reading here with Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is a foreign heathen pagan king in our estimation, because we're looking at the nation of Israel and his lifestyle and his religion, his faith in comparison to Israel. But how does God see Nebuchadnezzar? He's another beloved individual made in his image who is lost. And when he works through Nebuchadnezzar to bring his salvation about, and don't ask me about the disposition of his soul after all this. I don't know answers to that, but I know God is working with him so that Nebuchadnezzar in the end recognizes the greatness and sovereignty of God. And not only does he recognize that for himself, but what does he do? What's chapter 4? The whole thing's a decree. He said, write this down and send it to all the nation. God is God.
But in the end, God takes the kingdom away and gives it to somebody else.
Right. Now, what are the particulars of all that? What happens with Nebuchadnezzar between him and God? Can't answer all that, but it's interesting what we've been given to read and see for ourselves and how God.
After he gave the kingdom back to him, if I remember the scripture, we just read that he actually increased it.
Yes, that's exactly what it says. Where is that? Verse 38, at that time my reason returned to me. My majesty and splendor were restored to me for the glory of my kingdom, and my counselors and my nobles began seeking me out. So I was reestablished in my sovereignty, and surpassing greatness was added to me. That must be what you're thinking about, Preston. That's what it says. Who else does that sound like?
Job.
Sounds like Job. Job lost so much. And yes, we know the details that he didn't get back all the same stuff he lost. But the general idea is that God will restore to you sufficient so that you will not sit around thinking about all that you have lost. What's the one thing we might think about as far as Job's loss concerned? His children. But what was Job continually doing for his children? He was offering sacrifices, thinking one of my kids might have sinned. So children raised in that household, I would imagine, would have been people of faith. And maybe that is our comforting thought. Yes, those children lost their lives. Maybe they didn't lose their souls. Maybe they went to be with the Lord when the Lord took them. And now other children are restored. Charles?
Something about this story that's always terrified and humbled me is there's a long history of mental illness in my family.
Okay.
There's some people in my family violently schizophrenic. And there are some people who have schizophrenia who are the nicest people you ever met, and some people who don't. And then there's people in my family that I've cared for with dementia, watching them lose themselves And it's very terrifying, because all your life you're told, well, the only thing you can really control is your own mind.
Right.
And what's terrifying about it for me is realizing that I'm not in control of that either. But what's very peaceful and comforting to me is to know that the God who's in control of my mind and will decide whether I go insane also gets to decide whether or not I'm sane.
Exactly.
And relinquishing that control is so very difficult.
I will add to that, if there's anything that we might consider as the ultimate argument against Darwinian evolution, it is that we have minds. We can think, we can reason. There's no way that only those things that are physical gave rise to the ability to be conscious. And to have such a conscious mind that we are aware of a subconscious, and we don't even know what that's doing. How does it work? Because I know this has happened to you. I do it with Bible study all the time. You study something and you don't really get it, but you give it a few days and you come back to it. And after you've come back to it after a couple of days, it makes more sense now. How does that work? I'm not asking the question or making the statement so I can explain to you how that works, because I don't know how that works. But it works. It works. I have a subconscious. I'm on a ladder, and I'm afraid because I don't like heights. And I'm saying to myself, I'm 3 feet off the ground. Even at my age, I could jump this. But there's something in my head going on, and I don't know. And all of us have different kinds of fears, and we all have different kinds of courages, if that makes sense. We never talk about the courages, but we have fears. I just marvel at little children. They'll see a spider, and they'll reach out, and they'll grab it, like. And the rest of us are going, ah, whatever. It's just strange that we're different that way. And then we have dreams and nightmares and things like that. And this is a book about dreams and how God is communicating through dreams. And I'm not saying God's communicating to me and you through dreams, but our subconscious is something to consider as a great gift of God. And if we are filling our mind, our conscious mind, with the Word of God and thinking about the will of God and meditating, that gives our subconscious mind something to work with as well. It's like, I always bring it down to the level of food. But if you put a ham bone in a pot of beans and you cook it until the beans are tender, and then you hold off eating it, you put it in the refrigerator for about 3 days and pull it out, it will be better than it would have been if you'd eaten it as soon as they were tender. It's what? It's just, oh, you'll be hungry, yeah. Yeah. It's like the old joke. My grandmother started walking 3 miles a day 10 years ago, and now we have no clue where she is. It's kind of like that, Paul. Wait a minute. There was another hand. Did I miss another hand before? Okay, Paul. Oh, Preston. Oh, you're next, Preston.
Well, there's a couple of passages, one about the Tower of Babel, and where they speak one language, and the Bible speaks about there's nothing that they won't be able to accomplish. But I was trying to find the other passages, the one I was actually thinking about, in Genesis about eating the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and about, along the same lines, they'll live forever and won't be able to. And it's amazing. And I don't want to put words in the Bible that ain't there, but I thought there was a passage about us being able to accomplish. And while you were talking about Nebuchadnezzar and what Charlie's comments was, I got to thinking about the power of the atom. And he gave us the ability to reason and unleash that kind of power. Of course, it's his world. It's his creation. But he gave us the ability to figure that out. And I was just thinking about whenever the children of Israel left Egypt and how God hardened Pharaoh's heart. And then he showed his glory through all of his plagues and miracles that he did, was was done at that time, and then I thought about Nebuchadnezzar and how he was humble, and how things work, and how in our lives we need to humble ourselves in the sight of the Lord, like the song, you know. And I don't know, it's just kind of a combination of different thoughts, and in accordance with what you were commenting.
Appreciate that, and I hope we do not miss one of the lessons in here. Is the really the power of you as an individual. In today's political world, there's this idea of groupthink and group identity, but don't let that become part of your life or your world. You be an individual, and God saves us on the basis of our individual faith. And God relates to us on the basis of our individual relationships with Him. Here was a man, king of the most powerful nation in the world, and God was working with him on an individual basis. And you don't see this all the time. Who else has this ever happened to but to Nebuchadnezzar? There was something about Nebuchadnezzar, I believe, that was different, and I think we see it when he lifts up his eyes towards heaven and he repents. There's something about him. Why does God say of David, he's a man after my own heart, and this is a guy who can commit adultery with a woman, lie about the pregnancy, have her husband murdered, and God says he's a man after my own heart. To me, what I'm left to conclude is he's a man after God's own heart because he came back to God. He repented. He didn't just say, oops, I'm in trouble. I better make it right with God or I'm going to get punished. No. I think he really repented, and that's the thing about David, and I think we're seeing some of that same kind of spirit in Nebuchadnezzar. Oddly enough, think about how he was raised, how he was brought up, and here he is. He's repenting before the God of people he has conquered. And I better let Paul and then Bud have a word here before I hog everything. Right. And who is he speaking to when he makes that promise? In the context, it's the apostles. I'm going to send you guys the Holy Spirit, and he's going to enable you to remember everything that I've told you in the last, he doesn't say it there, but it's about 3 years. So here's a thought. When Jesus chose the apostles, why didn't he just snap his fingers? Boom. Now you know everything you need to know to be one of my apostles. Why did he spend 3 years with those guys about studying with them, reasoning with them, and when they showed that they didn't get it, why didn't he snap his finger? Okay, now you got it. The whole time Jesus is with them, he's teaching, he's training, and he's allowing them to get it just like everybody else is going to have to get it. Letting them take their time, letting the word sink into them, letting what they see impact them. Have you not read the Exodus and wondered, how could those people be so dumb? How could Pharaoh be so clueless? How could they see all that stuff? The Nile River turns to blood. That's the very first thing. And then the gnats and the frogs and the flies and the death of the firstborn and the manna and the water out of a rock and the pillar of cloud in the daytime and the pillar of fire at night. And they're going, that's Moses. He doesn't know what he's doing. God, how could you be so dumb? Because I'm never dumb like that. You see where all that should be taking us to pull down some of our pride and to help us to see the value of humility. Bud?
Well, I'm a great one for summing things up. So if I sound kind of silly, overlook me. But God gives us a way to know the unknowable.
All right.
In other words, what does this mean? How do I fit in? What's my story? But God gives us a way to overcome the things that we need, or I guess you might say, how can I learn?
Right.
How can I know?
Now let me ask you a question. When you're reading what Paul wrote to the church at Philippi, and he talks about, he mentions a peace that passes understanding, what's your first inclination? Is your first inclination to try to explain how that works? I know. I'm not going to say that it's mine. But that's the way we are. We want to understand. And sometimes it's like, I don't need to understand. I just need to know how to get the benefit of it. I know something about internal combustion, but I don't need to know everything to know how to get the benefit out of a car. I do need to know how to make sure the oil is changed. You need to know a few things about it. But the bottom line is, yeah, there's a lot of stuff we don't know. We don't have to know. But the one thing is, keep your humility before God and keep Him in a place of reverence and honor. We all good with that? All right, Lord love you. Class dismissed.